Canterbury. Now, Julia George Alice, not only have you brought in cordial, scented cordial, but you've brought in ice cream. What is it?
It's spruce ice cream, which Michael Rosen is enjoying.
Can you tell me the difference between spruce and Nordman? I buy a Nordman.
A Nordman fir? Or Nordman
Is that the same thing? Yeah.
No.
What does Nordman mean?
A fir is, and a spruce, they're two different trees. But a spruce, this is a blue spruce, so it's got this lovely blue
colour. Not colour, not on the ice cream.
No,
I
but the
say,
ice cream,
blue
if you
ice
look
cream
at it,
would not be
it's slightly kind of green, and that kind of vanilla flavour isn't vanilla, it's spruce.
It tastes like a Christmas tree.
Yeah,
it tastes like
but it's
a
quite subtle.
Did you put alcohol in it?
No.
I've got a sort of.
There is a little bit of ginger in it, but yeah, there's no alcohol.
Is that a question or a request?
No, I hardly drink. It's just the moment there's alcohol in something, I can taste it.
And that's not. What I find so funny is just how similar to kind of vanilla it is. But
I think this is a very good, hangover cure.
Probably.
Speaking from experience,
absolutely not. I was on Holcombe Beach yesterday, detoxing, and absolutely
detoxing. Okay, well done. From
but it was I think the expression is conscious decoupling.
Oh, yeah. Very very good.
Great word.
Very good. Now William Cash, the voice you can hear, appears to have had a successful and quite, I would say, glamorous life. The son of the MP Bill Cash, he went to Cambridge, worked in LA for the Times and the Telegraph. He's written two books, a play, founded a magazine, been a publisher, won loads of awards, and is the chairman of the Catholic Herald. But I think it's fair to say he has been less sure-footed in his relationships. Two divorces, a few fiancés. How many?
Fiancés. No, it's more than. It's well, there are about three, yes.
Okay, fine. We got it in the end. And many broken romances spawned more than 1,000 love letters, which he has kept. But he has managed to heal himself with a special project that he's already told us about, the restoration of this Elizabethan manor house. I mean, I have to say, it does sound like fun times, the LA Times. Where did you enjoy them at the time?
Well, I think that LA is actually probably the least romantic city on earth.
But glamorous.
It looks like it's glamorous. I think the problem is I stay too long. Mm. I started off having what would look like a glamorous life, sharing a house with Elizabeth Hurley, no less. Mm. But actually, the book actually begins with a letter I wrote to my then girlfriend when I was about just after 30, saying what a grim ordeal my 30th birthday had been. And in fact, the book is sort of structured around various landmark birthdays, each of which was more disastrous than the next. I think the worst was my 40th, when I was married to an Italian called Ilaria. And she very kindly gave me a 40th birthday party in the sort of hallway of our house, and she sort of was there putting the lilies on the table and the plasma, and I went to have a bath. And when I came out, I noticed she wasn't there.
Oh, dear.
And actually, she'd done a runner. And so I had to apologise at the dinner for the fact that my wife wasn't there. And that was the beginning. And in fact, as I alluded to earlier, I think when I look at the 1,000 love letters in my pig shed, what's interesting to me is that the more unhappy the relationship, the larger the file. Mm. And I do think that I definitely used writing. Sometimes I didn't send the letters as a way of not only talking to myself, but I think at a more visceral level, it was a way desperately of trying to make order out of pain and chaos. I found, I think Michael referred to how we use words to make sense of the past. Mm. And for me, as a writer, I mean, almost all my generation at Cambridge went into banking. But I found that something that definitely, it's sort of Wall Street and, you know, liar's poker. And I talk about this. I talk about the fact that I decided I wanted a different form of capital, which was experience. And that's why I became a journalist. That's why I went to Los Angeles. And I think I basically kind of overloaded myself in Los Angeles. And I became uprooted from what made me stable and happy, which was my family home in Shropshire.
So do you think, William, if you hadn't had this this time, this spell in LA, if you'd stayed in Britain and, you know, gone into banking or whatever it had, whatever it might have been, that your relationship history would have been less complicated?
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. I think that for me, writing the love letters was, I found myself looking back after 20 years when I was sitting in my pig shed writing the book, I did feel that I was somewhat sometimes the unreliable narrator. I mean, I know it's a sort of cliche genre, but I didn't actually recognise myself. But I did find it fascinating because sometimes when people write memoirs or autobiography, you know, they don't have, as Brian was saying, they don't have the original material. Now, my book is very much what I've called a biography of the heart. I've written a biography of Graham Greene. I know how, and that was relying on original love letters, which I had access to. So it was a very strange experience writing my own story of my own romantic vicissitudes using my own love letters. And I felt so grateful that I actually had the original, because I think it gives an authenticity when you're actually writing using. I mean,
you've got some examples, haven't you?
I can just, as I say, this is an example from a fax, and I think it's worth saying that it was rather wonderful having faxes in the 1990s, because you got to keep them. But actually, very bizarrely, I did, and you mentioned the word bonkers, it might be considered that, but I did photocopy any, you know, if it was over a page, a love letter. And I think it was because I didn't write a diary other than engagements. And I think, I don't know about you, Michael, other writers, but I found I invested a lot more emotional capital in writing letters than I do, for example, today in sort of emails and texts. So anyway, so this is a letter. I think this is exactly at that very moment I described when Ilaria didn't actually show up to my own 40th birthday party. And I managed to track her down to a hotel in New York. And this is April 2006. I'm in a terribly dark and lonely place and praying for God's mercy and grace that we could be reconciled. I never knew it was possible to be so broken and distressed. I want to start again away from everybody and London and lawyers and everything that's crushing me at the moment. And I said I didn't hear from him until about a month later. And I got a late night call before Easter, and I got on the first plane to New York, and I said, I'm so glad you called me last night. Some of the darkness lifted when I heard your voice. I'm not a good telephone person, so I'm flying out to New York this morning, in the hope you'll at least see me for a few hours this evening and tomorrow. I'm hoping the truth will set us free to do whatever God has planned for us.
Goodness me.
I mean, going back to Johnny Cash again, I only bring it up because his lyrics and songs have a scorching emotional honesty. And we talked about family and how there are family traits. And I have to say, people often say to me, William, I can't believe you've been so incredibly brutally candid and lacerating. And I think it's a strange thing. I'm sure it's to do with a kind of Quaker sense of searching for the truth, which is sort of embedded in the Cash gene.
But are your parents like that?
Well, my father, what people might be surprised to know is that the head of the family before my father was William Cash, who stood as a Labour MP four times. I came from Islington. We are Quakers. You know, we're not, although I happen to live in a restored Elizabethan house, we actually come from a very sort of liberal Quaker tradition. And I remember talking to Roseanne Cash about this, and she said, oh yes, she said the duel between sin and redemption. And the reality is that the pilgrim boat that Johnny Cash's family went out to America in 1667 was a pilgrim boat. And I think that, you know, my father has always been the sort of underdog. And I think that's something which certainly comes across in the book.
Tell us a bit about the house, because this is your kind of redemption. Well, your lowest point coincides with you taking on this huge project.
Alone,
yes, with you know, no experience, not any particular, you know, reliable builders or anything like that. This is a house that you were trying to restore that your parents got the lease for.
Yeah, so what happened was...
In the 70s.
That's right. What happened is my parents didn't want to bring me up bring a family up in London. And so they saw this ad in something called the Buildings at Risk Register of the Society of Protection of Ancient Buildings. It's a bunch of sort of heritage sort of anoraks looking to restore old houses. And what was rather wonderful about the 1970s is it was one of those times when you could actually pick up an old ruin, a wreck of a house, fairly inexpensively. So my parents were essentially... what I call restore-erect brigade. And I was brought up in a restore-erect family. And when we arrived, after a 4.5-hour drive in the back of a white Citroen Safari, my parents were just going to do a sort of looky-loo thing. And they couldn't believe it. The place was completely and utterly covered in ivy and brambles. We walked in through the door. There were no keys. And there were chickens and pigs. The farm had moved out. And it was essentially... a farmyard. And so I was, but my parents fell in love with the place.
But the thing is, William, they were able to restore it a little bit more sensibly, shall we say, than you, because they had a rule, one room at a time, a couple of £100, that's it. Yours was a bit more tortuous than that, but you did eventually do it. And am I right in saying that your idea was to find someone, to marry someone that you could then install there and have this happy family life? Was that kind of driving you?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So the memoir essentially chronicles the sort of, as I say, the romantic, the misery, the vicissitudes. And then finally, I managed to restore the house and I decided I absolutely needed to find a chatelaine. So a lot of the book is actually a kind of almost Billy Wilder-esque romantic comedy, the quest to find the third Mrs. Cash. And it was actually thanks to the house. And so...
It was the pig shed that did it.
Well, no.
Tinder, then.
What it was I met this... I went to this... I was very, very low point. I was the publisher of a magazine. And, anyway, the CEO was owed some money by someone and for some advertising. This happens the whole time. And they said, look, I can't pay you, but we'll pay you in Italian dinners because I've just opened an Italian restaurant. So I ended up going to this Italian restaurant in the opening week. And, of course, they wanted to sort of pack it out with glamorous people to make it look like it was fashionable. And I sat next to this amazing woman called Laura, who's now my wife. And she said, I know all about you. And I said, well, how come? And she said, I'm the one who sends you your invoices. Aren't you the aren't you the guy who is buying sort of wallpaper and fabrics for a house when the building work hasn't even started? And so it's true. I think that, but for me, unquestionably, it was trying to create a sense of order. I'm sure the letters were a way to try and create, as I say, order out of chaos. And I'm sure restoring the house was the same thing. And I, having now done it, I have to say it's a sort of, it's very enjoyable because the house was a sort of stage set for my life. And as I end the book, I talk about how I honestly couldn't imagine how my life would have been different had I not been brought up in what I sort of refer to as a sort of a stage set. And I think the thing that struck me the most in writing the book, Restoration Heart, is that it was always like when I, as you rightly say, I left Los Angeles, I was at a very low point. I came back to what was my port, which was the house where I'd always felt safe, my safe harbour. And as my marriage progressed and I then had a family, I realised that actually the real journey in my life, as I try to explain in the book, was moving from a sense of the house being what gave me a sense of identity, purpose, and a sense of who I was, and actually to being my family.
Yes.
And that was the big change. And now my family is the safe harbour.
Yes, I mean, we're coming to the end of the programme, but it does end positively. The house is restored, you're happily married, and you became a father at what age?
48, yes. I'm a fully signed up member of the Old Dad's Club.
40 what?
48, yeah.
That's not that old.
Well, for the first time. and it was... yes, the book ends with a proper romantic comedy with a happy ending.
Well, that's what we love to hear. Thank you so much. Like I say, there's a lot in there, as you probably gathered, but it is quite a crazy book and a good read. Restoration Heart, a memoir by William Cash, is out now. Michael Rosen, we are going to ask you to pick A song to play out with, and what have you chosen, and why have you chosen?
Well, there's this man called Johnny Cash. No, I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
Anyway, are you related by any chance? Anyway,
did we force you to choose Johnny Cash?
No. The moment I heard that there was this link, your very kind research producer said there was a link between William Cash and the great Cash, Johnny Cash, and there was a link, so I thought, well, if I've got the choice, so I have chosen, you'll be pleased to know, a Johnny Cash song. We're going with Rock Island Line, which I knew originally sung by Lonnie Donegan, but in fact, I think originally it was a Leadbelly song, if I remember, it was Huddy Leadbetter, freed from awful prison camp by Alan Lomax. So I think we're going to have Rock Island Line.
We are indeed.
Johnny Cash.
Thank you so much. That is it for today. Thank you to Michael Rosen, Briar Scudamore, William Cash, Julia Georgialis, Frank Skinner, and to you for listening. We are back next week, first show of 2020, with the writer Kathy Reichs. Until then, from all of us, goodbye and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, I fooled you, I got pig iron, I got pig iron, I got all pig iron. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Well, if you ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station for the Rock Island Line. Oh, cloudy in the west and it looked like rain. Round the curve come a passenger train. Northbound train on the southbound track. She's all right, I'll leave it, but he won't be back. Well, the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. Rock Island